Rohana Kennan.
Ash had little time for socializing, between his doubled class schedule and the time he spent in the healing halls and studying with Taliesin. Besides, he was a loner at heart. Now that Ash was a proficient and Lila a cadet in Wyan House, they'd ended up in the same dormitory. Though they saw more of each other than before, they mixed like oil and water. If anything, Lila seemed to dislike him for some reason. It perplexed him. Granted, he was no charmer, but he got along with most people. He stole another look at Lila, still distracted by the sudden transformation and wondering what had brought her to his door. Lila caught him staring and said, "No, Hansen. This is not the scene where the girl puts on a skirt and some paint and her schoolmate, who's a little thick, suddenly realizes that she is his true love."
"Oh," Ash said. "Good to know."
"Just because you're on the market doesn't mean that I am."
"What makes you think I'm on the market?"
"I saw Suze on the Bridge Street earlier. The end-of-term party started mid-afternoon. She wondered where you were."
"Oh, so that's what this was about."
Suze was a plebe at Eisenwerk. She and Ash had walked out together for a few months, but had recently called it quits. At least he had.
"I went to see Taliesin to say goodbye. It took longer than I expected."
"I think Suze was hoping to give you a reason not to go." When Ash said nothing, Lila growled.
"You broke her heart, you know. The least you could do is talk to her."
"I have talked to her. I've tried anyway. I told her up front that I wasn't looking for a long-term sweetheart. I thought we both agreed on that."
"Did you make her sign a bloody contract?"
Lila laughed, but there was a bitter edge to it.
"I promise that I won't fall in love with the moody, mysterious Ash Hansen. I will enjoy his rangy body, his broad shoulders and shapely leg, all the while knowing it's a lease, not a buy."
"Shapely leg?"
Ash thrust out his leg, pretending to examine it, hoping to interrupt the litany of his physical gifts. But Lila was on a roll.
"I will not fall into those blue-green eyes deep as twin mountain pools, nor succumb to the lure of his full lips. Well, I will succumb, but for a limited time only, and the stubble. Have I mentioned the stubble?"
Ash's patience had run out. Lila was far too fluent in Felsian for his liking.
"Shut up, Lila."
Chapter 1. In a foreboding tower, glowing with portent, or possibly pollen. Many moons ago in a principality far, far away, a hirsute lady slept in a tower that was covered in thorns. In general, such an occurrence would not be considered worthy of note, for people slept in towers all the time regardless of their current level of hair growth. But in this particular case, it was not just the lady who slept. Almost everyone in the castle was magically sleeping, including the Earl and Countess and even Oxnard the guard, sitting in the kitchen, with his mouth open, eyes closed in bliss, forever eating a piece of cherry pie, thereby creating with each passing minute a new world record for extended pie eating. Dogs, horses, children, knights, the bathing woman with soap in her eyes, everyone stood or sat or lay as if frozen in mid-action, even when such actions were wildly inopportune. The sole exception to the rule was the owner of a lonesome, warbling voice that could be heard every so often singing songs about remembered conversations and how awfully quiet sleeping people tended to be and how if someone didn't arrive with groceries soon, a certain someone would go to sleep and wake up dead because Oxnard the guard didn't have the keys to the tower door on him and they were nowhere to be found, plus the door itself had turned into solid stone and all the other exits and castle walls were likewise impossible to manage and food was getting rather scarce, especially cheese.
The skinny man gestured to the glass. As I placed it on the table, he grabbed my wrist and held on to me, his hand burning into my flesh. I tried to yank my arm away, but he held fast. I'm strong, very strong, in fact, but his grip was ironclad. "Let go," I said, low and hard. He snarled back, showing me fangs. "I know what you are, Nina Martinez." Oh, shit. My heart pounded. My canine teeth shifted and elongated, the adrenaline masking the pain as they tore through my gums. I flashed my fangs. "Who sent you?" I hissed, looking straight into his black eyes, daring him. He simply grinned. I kicked at the table. The table, the pitcher, the pub glasses, even the two women went airborne. The man held tightly to my wrist. He pulled an old rusted dagger out from under his coat with his other hand. I twisted my body and threw him over my back. He was still hanging on. We both sailed several feet in the air together. I landed hard in a puddle of booze, my assailant beside me still with the death grip. But he had lost hold of the dagger in the struggle. I could see it just a few feet away from him on the floor.
"Don't fucking move!"
a deep voice bellowed. Max from the other end of the bar, a gun in one hand and a badge in the other. Dropping my wrist, the stranger with a sadistic smile on his lips moved towards Max. With his attention on Max, I pounced. In one swift move, I dove at his knees and sent him tumbling to the ground. Before I could scramble to my feet, he snatched the dagger. He grabbed a fistful of my hair and pulled my head back, exposing my neck. The gun cocked, and Max growled, "Let her go." The dark-haired man flashed a grin. He whispered in my ear, "Ego tenio tu specialis." I recoiled.
"Who are you?"
"Marcello." And with that, he drew the blade across my neck before rolling away. My hands flew to the gushing wound, blood hitting the worn wooden floor in spurts. Max dropped to the floor beside me, and I cowered with my back to him, trying to hide the wound that was already starting to heal. Marcello leapt through the front window, glass shattering, his companions following behind. The burst of frigid air sobered everyone left in the bar. Adam was chewing his lower lip, his face all over dread, as if trying to decide whether to keep delivering bad news or leave her in the dark.
"You're wondering if I'm stupid or naive or both," Jenna said. "I'm neither."
Settling down on the thick rug in front of the hearth, she patted the space beside her.
"Sit down with me, Wolf."
Just for a heartbeat, she thought he wouldn't come. But then he did, crossing the room and dropping to the floor beside her. He sat, his thigh pressing against hers, one knee up, the other leg extended straight out in front of him. She arched her back, wriggling a little, enjoying the heat and the crackle of flames while she tried to work out what to say.
"This is an argument I used to have with my dad all the time. He was the kind who saw disaster waiting around every corner."
"See, he was right," Adam said, fussing with his collar as if it pinched.
"He was right. After 16 years, she said. "We spend so much of our lives waiting to be ambushed by heartbreak. Why couldn't we be ambushed by joy? Anything's possible, right?"
"Anything's possible," Adam said, staring up at the ceiling, a muscle working in his jaw.
"Take a wolf, for example," she persisted. "If he's got a thorn in his foot, he's miserable and snappish like a person would be. Once you take it out, does he worry it's going to get infected or he's going to step on another thorn?"
"No," Adam shifted his body, the friction between them sending her heart into a gallop.
"Does he cut off his paw to make sure it doesn't happen again?"
Adam snorted, his lips twitching. "No."
"Does he beat up on himself because he was careless or he took the shortcut through the bramble?"
She shook her head.
"No, he moves on. He enjoys the fact that he's not in pain. He doesn't know what's coming, whether he'll bring down a fells deer or break his leg and freeze to death. But he recognizes that he doesn't know. But people, we act like we do. We write that bad ending before we even get there."
"Isn't that what makes us human, the ability to look at the present and predict what's likely to happen?"
"But we're really not all that good at it, are we?"
"No," he said. Jenna rested her hand on his thigh and heard his startled intake of breath. They both looked at it, a pale starfish against his dark breeches.
"Take me, for instance."
Startled, he looked up.
"Excuse me?"
he said hoarsely.